Hello, everybody, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
And today we have a little different kind of an episode for you guys because we're not going to be squeeing about MSR the entire time. We're going to talk about a very important part of the X-Files, which is the villains. Would you say, is that a good way to describe it? I think that it's like, I said baddies. I like to call them baddies. But the way that I'm describing them is any character that exists as an antagonist to Mulder and Scully.
I like that.
Which is kind of open for interpretation when you
say. It is. It could be a lot of different things. Because, you know, where would the X-Files be with an antagonist? It would be a dull show indeed.
It would be. Yeah.
And we have like almost a different one every week a lot of the time. So there's lots to pick from.
There are a ton. It was funny. I didn't find this list incredibly hard to make. Oh, we're doing lists again. We love lists.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, lists.
We're doing our
top. We live by lists.
We do. It's the best way, I think, to talk about this stuff. I think it makes sense. Yeah.
I love ranking things.
Yeah, it's hard and it's fun.
It is.
We're doing
a challenge.
Top 13. Because, you know, 13 is the unluckiest number.
Yeah, it just seems to suit the bad guys.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to hear, we were just talking about this off mic, but I'm curious to see how many, we don't know each other's lists, how many overlaps we have, because when I was first making my list, I was like, well, that's got to be on there. Well, that's got to be on there. And then I was kind of like, you know what? It doesn't. It don't have to pick
that's
it just because I feel like it has to be on there. And, you know, so it'll be interesting. There are definitely a few on here that we will share. But
yeah, I would think so. Should we guess how many we're going to have in common?
Yeah. What do you think?
Out of the 13, I'm going to guess that we're going to have 6 in common.
I was going to say 6 also.
All right.
I'll say 5 just to be different.
Okay.
And to be optimistic.
Okay. All right. Cool. That's cool. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how it all shakes out.
But I'm excited.
I think, at the end of the day, you just got to go with wherever your heart takes you. And, you know, some of these are like odd, a little bit odd, but they just grab me. And there's some that I've left off that some people would be like, how could you not? And I'd be like, it just doesn't do it for me. So.
Right.
It's completely subjective. So that no one can be wrong that way.
Yeah. And I like that.
But I'm sure someone will think we're wrong. Mm-hmm. So that's okay.
We wouldn't be X-Files if that were the case. So
no, we want to hear it. We want to hear what you thought about our list when all is said and done.
Well, would you like to start us off here, Jen, with your number 13?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Lucky number 13. I had to pick at least one terrifying child. And because they show up a couple of times through the X-Files. So I decided to go with the Eves from the episode.
Oh.
Going back to season 1. Played by twins Erica and Sabrina Crevens, I believe. They are just so like, they just have this super chilling flat affect.
Yeah.
That they just look like these normal little girls, but there's something just a little off about them. And, you know, they're homicidal children and nothing gets much scarier than that to me. They just look so harmless. Like they have that line where we're just little girls. It's like they hardly say anything for the whole show, but they have that one line.
Yeah.
And then they're like, they never smile except when they're like poisoning the older Eve. And it's like so scary. So they scare the shit out of me. So the Eves are my number 13.
I like that. That's a really good choice. And I actually almost picked them.
All right.
But I don't know why I didn't. Maybe it just like, I think that's actually a really good episode, but I don't know. Just don't have an attachment to it. But those girls remind me of God, who do they remind me of? Just in the way they look, they remind me of the girl on Charlie and the Chocolate or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Never even seen that.
How have you not seen that? That's
I'm
crazy.
Sorry. I know.
She's not scary, but she's like spoiled. I don't know. They kind of remind me of her in some weird way. But they're good. Those girls were cast very well.
They were. I mean, I don't know how much of that is acting and how much of that is just the kind of girls they are, but they're scary as hell.
They remind me, and hopefully this one isn't on your list too, but they remind me of the little girl in Chinga as well. It almost seems like, and it can't be obviously, but it almost seems like it could be the same kid, like the same, because it's very, very similar you know, performance.
Yeah.
But that's
yeah,
a really, really good one.
There's a few creepy, scary kids throughout the X-Files going right into the revival. So
yeah,
obviously, Chris Carter finds spooky children as terrifying as I do.
Yeah. Well, there are. There are several. And yeah, they did a good job.
So they're my number 13. What's your number 13?
Nice. Okay, my 13, I don't really know if it has a name. But,
okay, this is now I'm intrigued already.
But it's the second coming Jesus banana slug the episode called Roadrunners in season right. 8, which is
I'm going to jump in for a second and say this is actually my number 12.
Okay.
So
wow.
That was going to be the next one I talked about anyway. So you go and then I'll go.
Okay. Do you have are you keeping track of this, by the way? Because I don't have a pen in front of me. Hopefully you
I have a pen. Yeah. I'm crossing off mine as I go. So.
Tally the ones that we have in common. So
yeah,
this episode is probably one of my favorite ones out of in season 8. It's absolutely terrifying and it's absolutely gory and it's just unsettling and really well done, and it's really nice to just I know I'm going to talk about the actual slug, but it's just nice to watch one of these season 8 episodes and be like, this is still really good quality content. You know, just because Mulder's not there doesn't mean it's not can't be a good episode with like a good bad guy. And I know that the slug is not technically a bad guy, the people are the bad guys, I know, but like this is the actual thing. Oh my God, it's so gross. Like I can't even talk about it because I'm grossing myself out. It's a really good like a prosthetic or a puppet or something, like when they're holding it and the way it wriggles around and it just looks so
crap.
Slimy. Oh
God, yes. It does seem really real.
Yeah, and I'm like I'm seriously having the twitches right now thinking about it. It's disgusting.
Ugh, but just, yeah, me too.
The idea, like this one freaked me out because I mean, anytime they do creepy cults, I love when they do creepy cults. Because you think like, yeah, obviously this isn't Jesus, but some creepy cult could kidnap you and try and stick a slug up your back because they think it's Jesus. You know what I mean?
Sure. So it could happen.
Yeah, it really could.
Yeah.
So that's not my number 13, but I want to hear what you have to say about it.
Yeah, that was my number 12. And if I had had a guess which ones we'd have in common, I would not have guessed that this is one of the ones we'd have in common, because I thought this is like a really weird pick. No way is Andy going to have this one. Everyone's going to be like, what?
It's off the wall, but hey, we're on the same wall here. That's pretty great.
We're off the same wall. I wrote down on my list, its official name to me is The Parasitic Slug and Its Cult.
Nice.
Because the people are, to me, the slug is gross and scary. And the idea of that thing being inside, I mean, they really pulled off the special effects really well. Also of it inside its victims, its hosts.
Yeah.
Whether the hitchhiker or Scully later on, it really looks like it's in there. They did a pretty impressive job to me.
I got to tell you, I am still not cool with the fact that they stuck that in Scully. Like, what is this, one or two episodes after we figure out she's pregnant? Like, I'm not okay with that. And then every time I get mad that she fell down the elevator shaft in Nothing Lasts Forever, I have to try and remind myself that, you know what? If she could make it through this fucking banana slug, she's fine. That baby's fine. Well, I mean, we all know what happened to that first baby, but the baby, she will be fine. That baby will make it out. So.
Scully babies are tough.
They are pretty tough.
And I mean, she actually knew she was pregnant. That's part of this episode. I mean, of course, she talks about the fact that she's pregnant. But I think that there's also an argument to be made that there's some kind of a parallel about the idea of an unknown thing being inside of you. Because at this stage, Scully doesn't know if she has an alien baby inside her.
Oh, what an interesting parallel.
Yeah. So the slug can kind of represent this, like, what is this inside me? Get it out of me kind of thing. Because I think sometimes we forget, at least I do, how much of season 8 is about the mystery of what would Scully's baby turn out to be and the fear and anxiety about that. So I think that this kind of plays into that a bit.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah.
It was very frustrating. So I remember.
Yes, it was.
And in retrospect, all completely sensical. So
it was nonsensical.
Exactly.
And the people are very creepy. They're just so happy and serene and sincere.
Yeah.
And then like once the slug is killed, they're like they're not malicious people.
No, they're just devastated.
Kind of violent impulses that they had.
Yeah,
they're just devastated. They just really loved that slug.
Yeah.
We never find out why. It's a complete mystery.
Well, we don't know
why they worship the slug.
Anyone really does the things that they do.
Well, this is it. There's a message there too, probably.
Yeah.
I must say, parasitic slug and its cult. Number 12 on my list.
High five. That's awesome.
High five on that one because that is a great episode. That is like a very well executed episode. So
agreed.
Those that have eschewed season 8 and you just want like a good monster of the week, that's the best one of the season.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Completely. Yeah.
So that was my number 12. What is your number 12?
All right. Well, my number 12 is kind of a silly one.
But, yay.
Morris Fletcher from season 6 Dreamland.
Yeah, nice.
We all know my love for this episode, and and him in particular, Michael McKean, I will say, is my favorite guest star ever to appear on the show. Right. I think he's so great in this. He's the perfect combination of you don't quite know whether to laugh at him or be pissed at him or just want to kill him. By the end of it, we all know what we want to do. But I just think he's such a cool sort of antithesis to Mulder, like a nice, you know, he's different enough that like obviously Scully knows something is up, something's going on. Yeah. And at first you think he's just kind of a doof, but then you're like, you know what, he's actually taking advantage of this situation. He's like cheating on his wife or attempting to, and he's just totally fine with abandoning his family, you know. Yeah. Doesn't have any sort of qualms about stealing someone else's life, and he's so he's kind of an asshole, definitely an antagonist, definitely. Yeah. I think worthy of being on the list. And you know, another moment of poor Scully getting seduced by Mulder under false pretense.
They really like doing that.
They do. They do.
But at least she was on to him in this one.
I mean, we don't know she
was on to him until she cuffs him to the bed.
Oh, yeah, the handcuffs thing. And many a fanfic was born.
And many a fanfic was born.
And then canon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway,
I think that is such a great choice. I don't know why I didn't pick him, because I love Dreamland too, and he is a great character, and it is terrifically well acted.
Yeah.
And he's funny and silly, but he is a little sinister too. I mean, we do remember that, you know, he's kind of a bad guy. He's in league with the bad guys.
And he's completely fine with just letting all of this go ahead.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, he's a very interesting character. And for me, that's what it's all about with, like, who would make my list of the top 13 is who's interesting to watch.
Exactly. Who's the most, you know, which ones are fun to watch? Like, yeah.
Yeah. They're not people I admire or things I admire or want to get anywhere near, especially that slug.
Yeah.
But it's just what ones are interesting to me and interesting to watch and make for a compelling episode. And he definitely does. He meets that criteria. So,
yeah.
Good one. Excellent. Nice.
All right. So we're down to 11.
11. Okay. We'll see if you pick this one too. My number 11, technically, it's two or four people. It's Chucky and Judy Poundstone from Plus One, as portrayed by Karen Connival, brilliantly. So I'm counting them as like one character, essentially, since it was one actor.
Yeah.
Mainly because she does such an amazing job with the two Judys and the two Chuckies. So she's essentially playing four characters altogether in the episode. And they're kind of silly and funny, but they're pretty damn sinister too, especially like Demon Judy, I find like super scary. And we find out by the end, they were homicidal children as well. Their parents were both killed as well through a game of hangman by their children, Chucky and Judy. So there's that, you know, homicidal children grow up to be terrible homicidal adults.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just fun to watch and interesting. And Karen Connival deserves all the awards, if you ask me. And she did an amazing job. And I just think she's an awesome person. And did you see the great video that she did for the 25th anniversary of the X-Files as well?
Which one?
She did a video for, I think this was like in conjunction with X-Files News. She in character as Chucky. talking about the 25th anniversary of the X-Files.
I'll have to go find this. That's amazing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we should tweet that out because it's amazing. And it's like brilliant. And she just like that character comes right back to life.
That's awesome.
She has such a handle on all versions of those characters.
Yeah.
And it's just really entertaining to watch and to see how she does that. She took that really like seriously to really do a good job with that. And
it shows.
It shows, right? It's interesting mm-hmm. to see the little differences she did, like the different duties. One is right-handed, one is left-handed, little things like that. It's fun to sort of watch those on rewatch and see what little clues you can pick up.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, it's just one of those shows where the details, watching for details pays off because the actress put those details into her performance. So Chucky and Judy Poundstone are my number 11.
That's a really cool choice. It's funny because I get so distracted by everything else going on in that episode that I don't forget about that, because I think one of the things I love about Plus One is that the X-File is also fantastic. I mean, it's a really, really cool X-File. I think those characters are really great, but I think what makes them great is her performance. So, I mean, that's awesome. And I think that scene with Judy, Demon Judy and Scully, like the first time we meet Demon Judy, I think that's probably, other than all the shippy shit that goes without saying, I think that's probably the best scene in the episode.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, it's really good. Great. Well and acted just, by both of them. So.
And the fact that like the nurses are so terrified of her as well. Yeah. They're like, we're not going in there.
Yeah, yeah. No,
that's
cool.
It's like funny and scary at the same time. Like, whoa, it must be bad.
Well, I didn't. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it is like a almost like a different episode. Sometimes I forget all of the stuff that happened in Plus One because there's a lot going on in Plus One that doesn't necessarily have a lot to do with each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, the X-File is really great.
Yeah. That's a really cool choice. Cool, interesting. And it's funny, I kept my mouth shut and didn't say anything because you're going to laugh at my number 11.
Okay. What's your number 11?
My number 11, Karen Cannavale in Home. As Ma Peacock.
Of course. That makes sense.
And I mean, I'm technically putting all the Peacocks on the list here, but her in particular, I don't think it's any surprise to anyone who knows me that this is one of my very, very favorite episodes. So of course they're going to be on my list, but I just think it's so, everything about them is just like the worst thing you can think of. Like, it's the incest. They kill the babies. They're disgusting looking. They just completely murder people with no restraint at whatsoever. I mean, they would. That's what I love about them as like villains is because they're going to do whatever it takes to survive. And I think what's so cool about this particular character, Ma Peacock, other than I'm hungry, which is probably one of the best lines ever.
Nice.
Thank you. I try. Nice. I think that I think that they planted the seeds of Scully wanting children since, you know, season one. So, I mean, I don't think this is the first time we're seeing this, but when you watch this episode and think about what's to come later with Scully and William and all that stuff, and obviously they weren't planning that, but when you watch it, it really, really hits home some of the stuff she says to him, home, and no pun intended, some of the stuff she says to Scully when she's talking about, you know, what you would do for your kids and all this stuff, and it's really affecting Scully. And I mean, everything about this character is really brilliant. Like, the makeup is amazing. It's just I'll never forget the first time I saw it, and so definitely Peacock's Ma Peacock, number 11.
That is a memorable role, to be sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, what were the odds that we'd have that there would be two different characters but with the same actress?
That's crazy.
That they're not meant to be connected in any way, shape, or form, but it just so happens
it worked
that
out.
When the X-Files want someone awesome to play a bad guy, Karen Cannavale just comes to their mind. And why not? Because she's awesome. And of course, she's on The X-Files one more time, but not in a bad guy role when she's in that was her first role in Clyde Bruckman, wasn't it? When she plays, I can't remember her name, but she's the psychic, right? Yeah. So they know a good thing when they found Karen Cannavale, because they brought her back a couple of times and she was awesome every time.
Yeah.
So glad she came back in the revival too, because she just keeps knocking it out of the park.
Yeah, she's great.
She's awesome. So nice one. I love the symmetry.
Me too. This is kind of cool.
Those two number 11s. That was awesome.
All right. What's your number 10?
My number 10 is going back to season one again. From the episode Fire, Not Otherwise Beloved by Me, but Cecil Lively is an awesome character for me.
Wow.
I love him. Yeah, this one's a little bit obscure, I think.
Very obscure.
He's got like a certain something about him. He's got like that dramatic flair going on. There's that scene where like he snaps his fingers and the whole hall of the house goes up in flames. He's just got it going on. And like his arm is on fire in the bar and he's just like Mr. Calm, Cool, and Collective while everyone's freaking out. And he's got like this maniacal laughter while he's like on fire at the end. And it's like, who could forget that?
Yeah.
And he's played by Mark Sheppard. Who went on to become quite a star, I think, on Supernatural, which I have not watched personally. But he's quite a figure on the con scene, I believe, from that. He was at Montreal Comic Con when I was there. Oh. And by all accounts, put on a heck of a show. I think he was at the Edmonton one, too, actually, now that I think about it. So he is a popular figure. Apparently his panels are something to behold. So he's got a lot of fans now from that. But, you know, the X-Files oftentimes, they recognize good actors before they are well-known elsewhere.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
He was great. He was just great in that role. He makes, to me, an otherwise poor episode much easier to take. So that's why the fact that I can get through that episode is entirely on Cecil. So he's on number 10 on my list.
That's actually cool. That's a cool choice. Not on my list, but I remember very specifically the scene where, I think it's right after Scully sees Mulder dancing with that chick, I don't know, whatever. And she turns around and sees him just standing there kind of staring at her creepily.
Yeah, like, so creepy.
That image is the one that kind of sticks out in my mind of him. I mean, and I remember him lighting his finger on fire too. I actually just recently watched that episode. It's not one that typically crosses my path in terms of, hey, I'm gonna watch Fire, but
yeah, can't wait.
But that's why I love that you picked that, because it's kind of a really off the wall random choice. But yeah,
it is. But I just love Cecil. Always have, always will.
That's cool.
Yeah, he made that one for me. So what's your number 10?
Okay, my number 10 will certainly not be on your list.
Okay, we'll see.
But I love it. Season 4, Never Again, the Betty.
Okay.
Tattoo.
Okay, that's a good choice.
I love, everyone knows I love this episode. It's also another one of my very favorites. Jodie Foster plays the tattoo, and she is so fantastic. With not very much to work with, but she does so, I mean, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean that in quality. I mean that in quantity. She has, you know, not a lot of lines, but whenever she's on screen, you're just like, or not on screen, whenever you hear her, you're like, oh shit, something's going down. Like, her performance is so great. I love the idea that, like, it didn't, you know, obviously didn't put me off tattoos because I went and got a tattoo recently. But it does, the idea of somebody putting something on your skin that's never going to go away, that actually gets into your skin and into your psyche. Like, the whole idea of that kind of as an X-File is really cool. And I love I love the way the tattoo looks. It's so cool. I love how she changes too. You haven't seen this episode recently, so maybe you don't remember, but like, depending on her mood or her level of jealousy, like, she'll be winking or not winking or something. Like, it's just really, really cool and just subtle. And I love the idea that it's like this woman hater. Like, she's making this man kill people out of jealousy. And then one more thing I wanted to mention. I don't know if you noticed this if you're watching it without headphones, but if you're watching it with headphones, the voice constantly goes in a circle around your head. Like,
does it?
Yeah, it goes from one ear to the other, to the back and forth, like she's in your head. And it was such a cool choice for them to make when they were mixing the sound on this episode. And again, I don't know if you notice if you're just watching TV, but if you watch this episode on headphones, it's really, really cool.
Okay, I definitely have to watch this on headphones now, because that is super cool. That's a really clever choice to do that. Yeah, I think that's a great choice. I think that it's a very well-written I don't know what to call it. It's not really a monster. Let's call it a tattoo.
Yeah.
It's a really well-written tattoo character.
Yeah.
It's clever. And yeah, you're right. It's a great X-File. And I mean, Jodie Foster, what a coup to get her to play this tiny role, really.
Yeah. But very memorable. I mean,
memorable.
Yeah. She did what she had to do.
If they didn't have someone great playing that role, it wouldn't have really probably made anyone's lists, because it's kind of could have been pretty forgettable, but yeah. She made it awesome, as she does so many things. I love Jodie Foster. So
yeah.
Good choice.
Thank you. What is your number nine?
Number nine. Okay, this one is probably my next couple are probably pretty common ones that people would think of.
Mine too.
My number nine is Luther Lee Boggs from Beyond the Sea.
Oh, he almost made my list.
Oh, good. I'm so surprised he didn't. So that's great.
Yeah.
Played by Brad Dourif.
Yeah.
I think anyone that thinks of Beyond the Sea tends to remember his performance, because it's definitely memorable. It's a pretty colorful kind of character. It's a great physical performance in terms of the sort of the poses he takes depending on who he's supposedly channeling and what his mood is. I mean, he's just like, he's putting his all into that role. He's just like, everything is coming out of every pore at all times. And he's interesting because he's a little bit of an ambiguous character. Like, he sometimes seems to be helping Scully, and obviously there's a lot of evil around him at the same time. It's also a little bit ambiguous about, is he a fake, because occasionally he's shown to be a fake when Mulder gets him to do a reading on his New York Knicks t-shirt, mm-hmm. and totally fake there, obviously.
I'd like to do a reading on his New York Knicks t-shirt.
Oh,
sorry. I'm sorry.
Baby.
I'm sorry.
Yes, you know it.
I had to apologize.
Where's the rest of that t-shirt? Anyway, gosh, now I can't stop thinking about it.
Sorry about that.
Like, now he doesn't have that t-shirt to wear. He has to go around with no t-shirt on at all.
Stop. You're taking this the wrong direction. We're talking about serial killers.
Yes, we are. Focus, Jen. Okay. But sometimes Boggs seems to have like genuine insights. Like, you know, he warns Scully about the Blue Devil and kind of saves her life and things like that. So, and you know, he seems to know things about Scully that, you know, she kind of dismisses it a little bit at the end. Like, oh, he could have found that out from anywhere. But some of the stuff he knows does not seem like the kind of thing that would have been available publicly. So mm-hmm. he's a convincing kind of character. Talk about interesting to watch. Like, everything he does and says is quite sort of memorable and kind of interesting, and he's a really memorable villain for me. So he's number nine on my list.
That's actually a really good choice. I mean, I love this episode so much. I mean, I think I left him off the list out of pure bitterness, because I feel like he kind of like stole that episode from Jillian, and
he
like
did a little bit,
and like that's like her episode. So I was kind of like, come on. I mean, and she obviously was fantastic, but I feel like, why do you got to let Scully have this awesome meaty part and then put her opposite this other guy? Like, she's good. Mm-hmm. She's good. She can do it herself. But no, he's a great, great character. Great performance. Awesome. I love whenever they bring back Mulder's profiling abilities, like his past in the profiling realm, or you know, even just violent crime or whatever. But like, I just like when they bring that back. I think Brad Dourif did a great job, and I think this is an awesome character.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a pretty over the top character, especially by X-File standard. Like you say, it should have been Jillian's episode, and in many ways it is. But you know, the character of Scully just can't compete with the character of Boggs.
Right.
Because Boggs is such a larger-than-life kind of character.
Right.
Which we don't see all that often on The X-Files, so it stands out for sure when we do.
Especially so early, so. But yeah,
definitely.
Great choice. It almost made my list. Very close.
All right, cool. What's your number nine?
My number nine, I'm certain that you have probably higher, unless you're trying not to be boring. Carl Gerhard Busch, the cigarette-smoking man.
Yes.
He would be much higher if not for season 11 ick factor, I gotta tell you.
I understand that.
I'm a little personally offended by his creepy obsession with Scully. I think it's gross. Yeah. Yeah. I don't need that as part of the plot. And, you know, again, I'm not going to get into like all the other bullshit that we've already talked about with her and the, I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about why he's on my list, which is the early seasons when he was just so badass and just so mysterious. You didn't really even know who he worked for. I mean, in the end, we kind of figured out he worked for the Pentagon or the military or some sort of shadow segment of those. Or he definitely had those sects of the government under his thumb for sure. But I mean, I wrote the quote here: "Don't try and threaten me, Mulder. I've watched presidents die."
Because I love that line.
I mean, come on, like you can't get a better line. Like,
that's awesome.
Seriously, Luke, I am your father. That's the only other line that competes.
Seriously,
it's amazing.
Yeah, no, that's a great line.
He's an amazing character, and I think lift out the season 11 bullshit that we learn about him. And I mean, even knowing that he you know, made William, I don't have a problem with that. I just don't like how it all happened, or how we're supposed to believe it all happened. Like, I kind of, but I just don't like the fact that it's like, why you gotta, like, leave Scully the fuck alone? Like, my God. Like, I'm just, like, I'm tired of it. You know what I mean? So leave that out, and he would be much higher on my list. But he's got to be on the list because he's awesome. He's just at 9, smoking man.
Fair enough. He is on my list. He's higher than 9.
Okay, you don't have to tell me what.
That's all I'll say about him maybe right now. I'll talk about him more maybe when we get to him on my list.
That's
but
fair.
I'll say I 100% agree with everything you've said so far.
Okay.
And yeah, I definitely agree that he was better in the earlier seasons.
Yeah.
I think for me, his character became a little less compelling once he was revealed as being Mulder's father.
Yeah.
Up until then, he was just kind of this cool, mysterious guy that was just up to shit for whatever reason he had. And that just kind of took it in kind of a, I don't know, like a soapy, predictable kind of direction.
That felt like a jump the shark moment to me,
it
honestly.
It kind of did.
Because I was like, really? Like, really? You got to do the Star Wars thing? Come on.
Yeah. So that, it's just not super imaginative to me and just not interesting. And that was, so I think that's like, and I think we find out in Sixth Extinction 2, I do believe. Mm-hmm. That's when it's confirmed, at least, that he's Mulder's
father. I think that's the first time that it's brought up, although, I mean, obviously it's heavily, heavily indicated or implied.
Yeah.
But I think it would have been much more interesting if you found out he was Samantha's father, which he very well may be. But, like, I think it would have been interesting if Mulder had found that out. Because
that would have been interesting.
I think that would have been a more compelling storyline, to be honest. Because then all these things would have been called into question about why was she taken and for what purpose. And then, you know, all the Smoking Man's reactions to, like, talking about her and, like, seeing pictures. I don't know. I just thought that was a really kind of dumb thing. And who knows? I mean, the only reason that we know for sure that he's actually his father is later, much, 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 much later in season 9 when, you know, in the episode William, when Scully's comparing his DNA to the crispy guy. And it's Jeffrey. I mean, and it's revealed that he's actually related to Jeffrey Spender somehow.
Right.
So, I mean, up till then, I was like, hey, I think that the jury's still out on that. But as far as I know, it's the X-Files, so the jury's out on everything. But, like,
that's always possible.
But I don't know. You're right. I would say late season 6, season 7 was kind of where that kind of started to go. He got less interesting, for sure.
He became less interesting. Up until then, he was totally badass. Just, like, he just seemed so invincible and mysterious. And he just always seemed to be having such a good time. At the same time, like, he's a little snarky sometimes and arrogant. He's got the swagger about him.
Yeah.
And I just love all that about him.
He likes to talk.
Likes to talk. And he can talk really well. I think he's, like, brilliantly played by William B. Davis. I think he really made the role. I mean, I think he literally made the role, because I believe he was cast with the intention of the role lasting, like, all of an episode or two. But I think he's just, you know, one of these actors that took a role and ran with it. And turned it into something great. And I think the quote that I read from him, that he talked as well about when he was at, I saw his Q&A when I was at Montreal Comic Con, villains don't think they're villains. And that's how he plays it. He's not a villain to himself.
He thinks he's doing everything. And I mean, he even says as much, I think is it season 10? It's one of the struggle episodes. He says, all I want to do is be able to prove to my my sons that I was right. Like, he says something like that. So it is true. I mean, it's like, hey, you know, the Nazis didn't think they were doing anything bad either. So
exactly. So it's all the more chilling for that reason. You know, he's not like some kind of cartoon silly villain.
Right.
He's a real person. I mean, he's pretty evil, but he's not crazy. Mm-hmm. He's doing what he's doing for his own reasons. And he talks a lot about that he's got like a series of monologues in Two Fathers. Well, it looks like monologues. It turns out in the end that he's talking to Diana Bowie.
Right.
But we won't talk about her.
No. She will not be named.
I'll edit that bit out.
Oops.
We'll replace it with a beep so that we don't trigger anybody.
No.
I've said probably once or twice before that I don't care for monologues on the X-Files, but I make an exception for William B. Davis because he can just deliver those like nobody else can He's got that style about him. He's got that kind of stage actor's presence.
He's compelling. You want to watch him anytime he's on screen. You want to hear what he's saying. So really good point.
And those monologues are actually not bad monologues. That I was reading them today and I'm like, these actually are like pretty well written by like Carter monologue standards.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's an extremely low bar to cross.
It's a really low bar. But William B. Davis does great with that. And he does really great with his voiceover at the start of, I want to say, is it My Struggle 3 that he gets it? Yeah, Struggle 3, he has the voiceover at the start of that. Because, I mean, Chris Carter, my main complaint with his voiceovers is that they're written in this kind of over-the-top way that no one speaks, except Cigarette Smoking Man actually does speak that way.
Yeah, you're right. It works with him.
It works with him. So
that is actually a really cool. I liked that. Oh, that monologue. That was a really good one.
Yeah, he really pulled that off. Mm-hmm. He's just really interesting to watch. So
and apparently immortal.
And geez, that's problematic. All that immortal stuff. He needed to have a cool ending. I mean, every great villain deserves a cool ending.
No, I mean, if he's really dead, I think he did have a cool ending.
I guess it was all right.
I think I just love sexy Mulder killing people. I'll take it. So.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that Mulder killing him is the absolute right way to end him.
Yeah, exactly.
My only complaint is that it was too fast. I feel like I wanted to see him suffer a little bit longer, like realize that all his plans had gone awry.
Oh, he did. Oh, I think he did realize it.
Well, he did, but just I would have liked to have that have gone on for just a little longer.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain with all the things I have to complain about in that episode. That is not even on my list.
No, it would be like about 100 on my list. Yeah. But as far as CSM goes, I always like seeing him squirm because it happens so rarely.
Honestly, like I feel like that's the only time you see him squirm, because even in the other times when he's quote unquote died, you don't see that. Even when he gets blown up by a nuke, he just sits there totally chill. He just takes it.
Very serene every time he dies.
But I love that in MS4 when he turns and he sees that it's Mulder coming at him and he realizes in that instant everything he was trying to plan has gone to total shit. It's great. I think it's actually kind of one of those underrated moments of that episode. But
kind of is. That's a pretty good point.
We really did go on about Smoking Man, considering he's still on your list. But
the one thing I won't get into great detail about now is why I put him in the number that I put him in. So I'll talk about that when we get to him. But I think otherwise we've done a pretty good job. Oh yeah, I was going to say one more thing about him about. The only other time I can think of him really squirming is in Paperclip when he's trying to get
Skinner
the tape from Skinner, that very important data tape. And like he's just like losing it. Do you have tape?
You're right. That's probably okay. I mean, it's a different kind of squirming because he's still kind of trying to maintain his sort of facade.
He's
but
he's starting to lose it.
Yeah. No. Good.
That's pretty great because that's such an unusual thing to see, and it's like
I'm pretty sure that was the moment I fell in love with Skinner.
Oh, it definitely was for me.
Yeah.
This is the moment where you pucker up and kiss my ass.
Oh, yeah.
I love that whole scene. It's so, I love Paperclip. So.
That's a good one. All right, your number. Wait. So is it your number 8? Is that where
my number 8.
Go for it.
Okay, my number eight is sort of a good partner to my number nine, my number nine having been Boggs from Beyond the Sea. My number eight, another murderous person, another serial killer whose middle name is Lee, John Lee Roach from Our Hearts.
He's not on mine either. No, but I really wanted to. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good. We get to talk about him this way.
Great choice. Oh, great choice.
So he's played by Tom Noonan. And he's, to me, a really interesting contrast to, excuse me, to the Boggs character, because where Boggs is very sort of flamboyant, Roche, is it Roach? Am I saying that right?
I think it's Roche.
Roche. Roche is very, he's just very calm, cool, and collected all the time.
He's kind of understated.
Understated, friendly, likable, pleasant. His sinister sort of aspects are very subtle.
Yeah.
They're there, but very subtle. We might not believe that this guy was even capable of doing this stuff if we don't actually see it for ourselves later on in the episode. And he's got that really interesting sort of mind game that he's got going on with Mulder, where he's, you know, manipulating him. I wrote down, he can manipulate people without even breaking a sweat. And that's how he operates. And that's obviously how he got away with murder for as long as he did.
Yeah.
And he's just another one of these really well cast roles. Doesn't have to do much to intrigue you. So that's why I put him one higher than Boggs, is because he just draws you in without doing anything. And
yeah.
Just fascinating to watch, and just sinister and scary all at the same time, even as he's just being a friendly guy playing basketball. So
yeah, and when the way he talks about the victims, I don't know, this is a great episode, but just the way he just is so nonchalant about it, like,
yeah,
oh
yeah,
yeah, that one, that
so nonchalant.
That's what's so chilling, is these yeah. it's like this sociopathic behavior, like they don't really even know or care what they have done. You know, there's no remorse, obviously. That's why the guy's going to be in prison forever. But it's just one of those things that you're watching, you're like, these are the scariest kind of people, because they just have no soul, you know.
And absolutely.
You know, I want to take a quick tangent, because we were talking about this guy's understated performance, and yeah. I think that a lot of people, I wanted to point out that I think Mulder, or Duchovny in particular, does a really great job playing Mulder as having a past with these characters. Mm-hmm. And he does it over and over again, and he does it really well. It's like every single time this sort of thing happens, and I'm always just like, I want to say, okay, really, Mulder, another character that you used to, or another that you used to know about, or killer that's come back, that's like coming after you? Because I mean, I think at this point, it's probably like the third or fourth time.
It does happen a few times.
Yeah, but every single time he does such a great job. And I think David Duchovny is fantastic. I think a lot of people don't give him credit for what a great performance he does as Mulder, because he's so understated in the same way this Tom Noonan is.
Yeah, you're right. There is a real, like, the second that they have that first scene together on the basketball court, there is a real sense of familiarity with one another.
Yeah. And you have to kind of experience that from Mulder's perspective, or I guess more specifically from Scully's perspective. But like, it's believable. It's entirely believable. And I
absolutely.
Mean, as great as these characters are and these actors are, I mean, I have to credit that to Duchovny. Sorry, I didn't mean to turn this into a Duchovny love fest. But
no, that's okay. It's always a welcome event when it's a Duchovny love fest.
Exactly. But that's a really great choice.
I started going on about the t-shirts, so that's the least we can do, is credit his acting as well.
Ah, yes. I mean, we don't just love him for his body.
No, but we do as well. what's your number eight? Save me.
Okay, my number eight is most certainly on your list, and probably higher. Eugene Victor Toombs.
It's not on my list.
Are you serious?
I
thought this was certainly going to be on everybody's list. But this, you know what? This is like the baseball thing not being on your MSR list.
I know, I'm weird.
It's not that you're weird. You're just like, maybe you're just trying to be. No, I mean, you actually don't. You didn't leave it off because you didn't feel like, you just don't have a connection to this character, right? I guess.
Yeah, I. That's it. I mean, I love the episodes he's in. Love the episodes. But for some reason, him as a character just didn't quite grab me. But okay. I mean, it grabbed me quite a bit. Like, he'd make my top 20. He just didn't make my top 13.
I don't want him to grab me. anyway.
I should rephrase that.
I just wrote.
Why did he grab you?
Okay. Well, I just wrote, seriously, like, my notes just say creepy AF.
That's really it.
Okay, I'm sorry. His twitchy ass just like creeps me out every single time. Like his the way he smiles and like he's always like glistening and like his eyes, like I love the idea that they give him like yellow eyes. It's almost like he always has some sort of what's it when you have like actually like a kidney disease or is
like
it jaundice? Yeah. Jaundice. Like he's almost got, because he needs the livers, right? And that's different. Yeah. That's
I don't think I ever made that.
I guess that's kidneys,
before.
Livers. They're all different, but I don't know. Maybe
no, but it is like a liver thing, isn't it? Jaundice. Maybe. Yeah, like bile.
Yeah. So I love that little touch. It's a great touch. I think he, the way he looks at you, and I mean, I'm kind of personally. Not personally, but I'm just a little bit more connected to this character because I remember hearing an interview with, I think it was Glenn Morgan or something, where he was talking about how they cast this guy. And I want to talk about the actor because, you know, he's got a creepy real life stuff going on that I don't need to talk about. Doug Hutchinson is his name. You don't know? Okay. Google.
I'm going to Google him later. Okay.
You do. Anyway. The way he auditioned for this character, they were all like, this isn't going to be the guy. He doesn't look right. And he immediately just like launched into character and he unnerved like everyone in the room and they were like, this is okay. This must be the guy because he's freaking us all out. Like it was just a really cool story. And I think that he's probably like that, like in real life. Like I not like he murders people and eats their livers. I'm not saying that, but I mean like in terms of just being kind of creepy, I don't know. It's just a thing. It's very subtle. I mean, it's not so subtle. I'm talking about not when he's like a monster and he's coming after you and with all his nasty bile, which is also gross. I just mean when he's like being a normal dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's something kind of not quite right about him.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Like in the courtroom in Tombs, yeah. There's just like an aura of creepiness around him at all times.
Well, I'm thinking too specifically in Squeeze, the polygraph test. That scene, and I guess the Mark Snow music helps it along too. I mean, I love that episode, but like that's just such a great scene where you're just like, and Mulder knows, like, you know, I like those episodes where you watch and you're like, oh, I'm the Mulder this time because this guy's creepy as fuck. Like I could tell.
Yeah, we could tell.
Anyway, people talk about Tombs a lot ad nauseum, so I will spare you all. But number 8, Eugene Victor Tombs.
I'm having a harder and harder time defending the fact that he's not on my list because everything about him is really awesome. So I applaud your choice and I'm glad we got a chance to talk about him because he does belong in this episode. So
yes,
well done.
For sure.
Lucky number 7. Okay. I picked another member of the syndicate, specifically a character without a name referred to only as the well-manicured man.
Oh, I love the well-manicured man.
Played by John Neville. For those that may not can't quite place like which one was the well-manicured man, because there's like the gray-haired man all have these different names. The well-manicured man is like the older English gentleman who says things like, my God,
What are you talking about? Yeah, I know. Yeah, he's very, very dramatic. I love his delivery. You're right. It's my God. That's the line. I think that's in Fight the Future when he just, God, it's like so
he's
dramatic.
Just so outraged and horrified.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And I love it also in Fight the Future. He does a lot in Fight the Future. I love the line for some reason when he says at the meeting that he has arrived late to and they've already made all kinds of decisions. He says, my lateness might as well have been absent.
Yeah. That sounds like a Chris Carter line to me.
Oh, it does. But you know, John Neville can pull it off.
Yeah, no, he can. I think with something that he also said, it was like something, for God's sake. Like he's just so melodramatic.
You're doing a really good, well-manicured man right now.
You're too kind, but
it's true.
No, he's great. I actually like him.
Awesome, right?
I like him because he's like, I mean, I know we all have seen, you know, ex-syndicate members. When I say ex-syndicate members, I actually am talking about ex, ironically, but like, who have kind of, or in Deep Throat even, who have fallen off to help Mulder. And I feel like if well-manicured man hadn't been killed, he essentially did help Mulder. I mean, he helped Mulder find Scully, but like I feel like he might have been the next one to turn.
He would have been interesting to see. I was disappointed that we saw the end of his character, although it was done in a pretty spectacular fashion.
It was. That was a great, I mean, I love that movie, but that was a great scene. And
it was.
Kind of unexpected, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, here it's in the middle of Fight the Future, which is a great movie, and there's a lot of action, but there's this quite sort of, you know, it could have potentially been a little bit of a boring scene with Mulder riding around in the back of a limousine with this guy just talking. But, you know, because the well-manicured man is awesome, it just sort of elevates the scene that much.
And as I recall, they give a little bit of, like, information, like, answers.
Yes. Quite a bit.
So, and I think it's cool that they let him do it. I mean, and he was on the show, obviously, but he didn't have as big of a role. I feel like this was where they allowed him to kind of shine.
Yeah.
He actually was the one who warned Scully that her sister was going to get killed, probably, right? Technically that she was going to get killed.
Yes.
Yeah. So he was already kind of towing the line.
Yeah. We kind of see signs that he has a little bit of a heart. Like we see him with his grandkids,
right,
and he cares, but he just, you know, he's ruthless at the same time, though. We certainly see that as well. But he's just kind of an interesting character for that reason. He's just kind of got a couple of different sort of things going on in terms of you don't quite know what exactly he's going to do.
Yeah.
And he's quite complex. And he just played really well. And I just have to give a shout out about John Neville to my hometown of Halifax, Nova Scotia. John Neville was the artistic director of Neptune Theatre in Halifax from 1978 till 1983. And I can remember him being on ads when I was a kid, talking about Neptune Theatre. And so when I saw him on The X-Files, I remembered him from his time at Neptune Theatre. So I already kind of felt like I kind of knew him a little bit. And he seemed kind of like, you know, a guy that was almost from my hometown. So he's done a lot of interesting sort of, you know, stage work all over Canada. He's from the UK, but has done a lot of work in Canada. And so I was pretty excited to see him on The X-Files because I'm pretty sure he was a complete unknown to most viewers.
That's cool.
But to me, I recognized him and it was pretty cool. And I love him. He's got that stage actor's dramatic flair about him.
Mm-hmm.
So well-manicured man, number 7.
Nice.
What's your number 7?
My number 7 is, he does this, it's not a he, I don't know why I said that. This monster or creature or whatever doesn't really have a name, but it's whatever the monster or creature is in the episode X-Cops.
I thought about that one actually, but it's not on my list.
This is not, I mean, it's a hard one to pick because it's like a concept more than anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you never actually see the damn thing.
Yeah.
You only see the, you know, the disaster that it leaves in its wake, which I think is so cool and so clever to do. This is actually a really brilliant episode. I mean, a lot of people, yeah. I mean, I think it's on a lot of people's favorite list actually, but I think there are also like a handful of people that are a faction of people that don't really take it seriously as a good episode. And it is a very good episode. I like that it takes the form of your fear.
Yeah.
This the idea of that and the fact that they kind of like that's such a cool concept for a monster and that they stuffed it into this particular episode still kind of surprises me because I feel like they could have actually done this into just like a normal monster of the week. But for the reasons I just said, I think it's actually perfect in this episode because they don't ever see it. They just see all these cool characters that it's affecting throughout the whole course of the episode. But yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything else to say about it other than as a concept. I think this is one of the coolest X-Files monsters that they have done. Number 7.
And very scary, too. Super scary.
Yeah.
You never knew what was going to happen next or where he was going to show up. And it was a really interesting concept, the way it was executed. And I love X-Cops, too. So applause from me for that.
Thanks.
On to number 6.
Yes.
My number 6 is from Unruhé from season 4, Jerry Schnauz.
Oh, that almost made my list too.
Played by a fellow by the name of Pruitt Taylor Vince, and apparently that is the right order for his names. I double checked.
Vince
is really his last name, but apparently that's the order that the names go in.
Yeah, he's a character actor. Like he's on a lot of stuff, and he's creepy in everything. Yeah,
is he? Yeah, he just has a real creepiness about him. He's just another one of these just creepy X-Files characters. Like as soon as you see him, you know he's creepy. And he's got like, you know, he's got weird things going on with his eyes that are kind of freaky and. But at the same time, you know, he seems a bit sort of pathetic because, you know, his dad died, and he's like, at one point when Mulder's interrogating him, he says, you know, when his dad died, how did that make you feel? And Schnauz just says, sad. And it's kind of heartbreaking in that moment.
Yeah.
So he's another one of these kind of, you know, monster with pathos type characters.
Yeah.
Where he obviously has had a lot of sort of hard things happen to him. And he thinks he's doing the right thing by sticking ice picks into people's eyes.
Right.
Like, dude, you should not do that. But, you know, he thinks he's obviously very disturbed.
Yeah.
And there's like a reference that he's been mentally ill in the past. And he thinks he's helping these people by getting rid of their howlers. So he's an interesting character. He's complex. He's very creepy and scary. And I love that episode, too. So that's why he's my number six.
That's a really good choice. I remember him mostly from the movie Identity. Did you see that movie?
I did not see that movie.
You should rent that. You'll like it.
Okay.
Check it out. It's really good. He's the same kind of just kind of creepy, crazy guy. But I don't know why I always remember him in that movie when I watch this episode. It's a very similar performance, but a very good performance. Yeah. I think Unruhe is one of those really underrated, great episodes.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I really don't have anything to add that you haven't already said. He's definitely monster with pathos territory.
Yeah. Definitely.
But yeah, anytime any of those directly threatens our Scully, you know, he's got to go.
He's got to go, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, what's your number six?
My number six is from season 10, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This character is the best thing about season 10, and it's Guy Mann.
Yes.
From Mulder and Scully Meet the Weremonster. And seriously, this episode, it's so funny because I think Mulder and Scully have like maybe two scenes in it that are cute, but like they spend most of the episode apart. So I don't, it's not even them that make me like this episode, which is so odd for me in this show.
I understand.
Rhys Darby, I love him. Flight of the Conchords, he's amazing. I don't know, I could listen to him talk all day. I just love the New Zealand accent. I just love it. And he's so funny. He's so perfectly cast. And I mean, this is such a classic Darren Morgan character, but like in the same way that Peter Boyle brought Clyde Bruckman to life, it's Rhys Darby that brought this character to life. Like, I don't think anyone else in this character would have been able to play it as well, but it's not even just that. I think like I love how he looks as an actual monster. It's such a super cool design.
It is.
And I love like the tidy whiteies.
Yeah, all right.
I love when he's wearing his tidy whiteies. I just think like, that's
cute.
So funny. Yeah,
it's funny.
Yeah, I think that it was so cool to put him in these scenes with Mulder, and just allowing Mulder to be able to play off him was, I think, a really good choice. And the idea of like a werehuman, like, I don't know, like he's like a weremonster but like backwards, like, I don't know. It's such a brilliant concept that I have trouble believing that it hasn't been done before, you know.
It was so well done too. Just like, you know, all of the monstrous things that humans do, and all of the terrible things about being a human.
Yeah, it's such a good,
really well done,
good Darren Morgan episode. I love anytime he gets really kind of nihilistic about anything. This is like my favorite kind of episode, and that's Darren Morgan to a T. But the only last thing I have to say about this is like my favorite line is when he says, and I think they're talking about jackalopes or something, and he goes, tell that to my dead friend George. Every single time I hear that in my head, I start laughing. I don't know why. It's so funny. It's like my favorite line in the whole episode.
Oh my God. That's so great. That whole scene with him and Mulder in the cemetery is gold.
I absolutely love it.
It's the best scene in all of season 10, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
I love it. I think the only reason I didn't put him on my list is that I thought, I'm not sure if he qualifies as a baddie, but I'm glad we got a chance to talk about him. I'm glad you put him on your list because he's awesome.
He's certainly an antagonist.
Yes, of course he is.
At least at the beginning.
Yeah.
And again, monster with pathos, but he doesn't, he's not really a monster. Maybe he just is biologically, but he still counts because he is a creature and he exists as an antagonist. So
he does. You're absolutely right. And shout out to Dagoo, who looks super cute with the, when the weremonster is in monster form and Dagoo is like licking him playfully. It just reminds us how dogs love us no matter what.
Right. Because how does that dog not? How is that dog not terrified? I don't understand.
He's not scared at all. Yeah. He's just full of love because it's Dagoo.
I love Dagoo. Oh, Dagoo.
I'm getting the Dagoo squigs right now. Okay. Seriously now. On to number five? Are we on to number five? Yes. Okay. I don't know how many people would put this one on their list, but I love her. It's from season 11. Nothing Lasts Forever, Barbara Beaumont.
Oh, that's a good one.
As played by Fiona Vroom.
I think that's a great choice. I don't have her on my list, but
all right, good. Because I know not everyone loves that episode. Some people really dislike it. Some people hate that character. I love her. I love everything about her. She's crazy. She's got this, but she's like super charismatic, I think.
Yeah.
She's got kind of, sometimes she acts like in this kind of like almost childlike way, sort of pathetic. But she's also like super sinister and deadly. When she sings that song, The Morning After, I cannot get enough of that scene for some reason. I will watch that over and over again. I find it riveting.
Yeah.
I can't take my eyes off her when she's on the screen. I just think she's just really well played, just a really weird, interesting character. So she's number five on my list. I put her up pretty high because I just really, really love her. So my heart goes out to Barbara Beaumont. She's my number five.
That's a really cool choice. It's so funny. Nothing Lasts Forever. Like, I get people that randomly like, oh, I hated that episode. It was so gory. And I was just like, do you watch The X-Files? Like, what?
It
like,
was gory, though. It was really like, bleh.
Yeah, it was very gory. But I'm just like, there's been a lot of gory episodes. So I don't, I guess I don't, I didn't find it any worse than Home, for example. And that was 20 years ago. So
it's a different kind of gore, I think. It's like body parts kind of gore. It's cannibalism kind of gore. To me, I found it like I find it a little hard to watch that episode for that reason. I love the episode.
I guess. But, I don't know. I guess anytime I'm watching TV, I know it can't be too bad. So
yeah, I know. It does. There's something about the way they did it that kind of freaked me out. So, but it's a personal thing, I think. You know, different people find different things sort of unsettling and kind of disgusting. So
yeah, no,
that
totally.
One definitely grossed me out for sure. I wouldn't mind if someone could just whip up a little edit for me where they just take out the gross parts from that episode.
I'm gonna have to watch it again because I can't remember anything specifically that like really grossed me out. I'm trying.
Oh yeah, no.
I'm not.
They're making a smoothie out of people's organs. Yeah, like, that's but gross.
But like, I don't know. To me, that sort of thing is just like, I don't know. I don't. We're getting off topic. This isn't nothing.
Yeah, no.
This has nothing to do with the actual villain, Barbara Beaumont, who is fantastic.
It doesn't, but still.
Yeah.
It's an episode that people tend to have fairly strong feelings about, I find.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. I love everything about it, and I love Barbara Beaumont, and I don't care who knows it.
It's awesome. It's a great choice.
What's your number five?
My number five is also from season 11.
Nice.
My number five is Jackson Vandekamp.
Jackson Vandekamp, radical choice.
Yeah, I might be alone in this camp, but I am a huge fan of the whole plot idea that William turned out to be an X-File. Like, they laid the groundwork for it way back in the day, as much as it bothered us and none of us wanted to believe, and Mulder and Scully didn't want to believe. We all knew something was fucking up, right? We all did.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really fitting with the tone of the show that this is kind of what happened, and it kind of brings everything back into like this full, horribly tragic circle. But and I have a lot of problems, as we've talked about, with the execution of how this came about and all of this. But if I stay in my head canon that there is no CSM juice in this baby whatsoever, I can live with it because I think it's just a really cool, I think it's just a really cool ending. Maybe it's just my need for angst and being a masochist, but I kind of like the tragic nature of what happened to William. Yep. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a horrible person, but I think it's really cool. I think it's very interesting. And I think as a actual like monster, like his powers are awesome. Like they aren't really topped. You know, yeah. I love how he can explode those people. Like that was one of the coolest things.
That's an awesome scene.
People are always like, oh, that episode was so shitty. And I'm like, there were a lot of cool things in that episode. I mean, there's a lot of shit in that episode, but there were a lot of cool things in that episode. And one of my favorite things was when he was exploding the people with his mind.
That was pretty great.
Yeah. And I also have to count because it counts. The idea of Ghoulie, because that is Jackson playing Ghoulie, and I think that's one of the coolest looking monsters that we've ever gotten on the show. And I think, I don't know, I love the idea that this kid turned out to be an X-File and most certainly an antagonist. I mean, yeah, he's their kid, but he definitely turned out to be one of the villains in a way. So
I never I would never have thought to put him on the list, but I think he is a brilliant choice.
Thank you.
Because you're absolutely right. He's a monster in the end.
Yeah.
I kind of wish they had somehow played that up a little better, because I agree with you, because I read sort of some takes on that after the fact about, you know, kind of the tragedy of Mulder and Scully's son turning out to be an X-File.
Yeah.
And when I think about my struggle for in that context, it makes it much more interesting to me and much more compelling. So I kind of wish there was some way that they could have highlighted that within the episode a little better.
Yeah. I mean,
you don't want to, like, you know, hammer the point too much, but I completely missed that point when I watched it. But when I heard that interpretation later, it makes me like it a lot better.
Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, we should at some point do an entire episode just about William / Jackson and his purpose on the show. I would actually really be interested in doing that. But
yeah, for sure.
I think that I think that's why when I first saw it, I mean, again, with all the problematic things that we have and to remove the ick factor, like they could have, this still could have happened without Smoking Man, like being the father or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, this still could have occurred. And I think it would have been so much cooler, A, if they hadn't brought him up like at all in season 10. Like, don't bring him up at all. Make it be. Ghoulie happens and it's like, whoa, what the fuck? That's their kid. Like, that would have been the coolest thing. I mean, Ghoulie is already fantastic, but that would have been such a cool, like, reveal. Yeah. I mean,
it would have been a much more dramatic reveal.
But, you know, they'd been hammering it away for so long, and then they got you really reattached to this kid, which was a mistake. And then, you know, I don't know, again, a lot of it was the execution, but I think in terms of content and plot and the decision to do this to this character, I think it's a brave choice, and I think it was really fitting with the tone of the show. And I liked it a lot, and I think he's a great baddie. So number five.
Yeah. Great choice. I love that one. Okay, number four. This one is a not unpredictable one. I think that's probably true of the remainder of mine, I suspect. Number four, Alex Krycek. He's as played by Nicholas Lee. Is he on your list?
He's my number three, so we can talk
about
it.
All right, sweet. So he's on, you know, he spans quite a few seasons. I had to double check today to see how long he's actually on for. And he makes it all the way from season 2 to season 8.
No, he makes it to the end. He's in the last episode.
And he actually is in the truth. You're right. As like a ghost dream sequence situation. So he plays a really major role throughout the series. And, you know, he was so boring at first when he first came on in season 2. And he's just playing, you know, Mulder's replacement partner for a few episodes. And he's so boring. And I was just like, who is this guy? This is such a boring character. And then, like, out of nowhere, he turns into this, like, total villain in Ascension. And it's like, now things are getting interesting.
Yeah.
And then he's, like, you know, super bad guy for the rest of the series in different interesting ways. You know, he's, you know, whose side is he on? He's always playing different sides. You never know what side he's on because he just keeps switching just, you know, because he's out for himself. So you never quite know what he's going to do next. It makes him sort of unpredictable, and that makes him kind of interesting. And I'm going to say the more sort of villainous he became, the hotter he became as well.
Oh, yeah.
And I find him just a very hot character. He has like crazy chemistry with anyone he's in a scene with.
Yeah.
He's like David Duchovny that way. Some actors just have it. And I think Nicholas Lee has that, because whether he's in a scene with like Maria Confirmaris or Mulder or even Skinner, there's just electricity in the air all the time.
He's the only one, I think, like, who has fanfic with shipping him with like every possible character.
And it's all like super credible. I mean, we've talked before that I'm not like a huge fanfic fan, but I will admit I have read some Krycek Mulder fanfic, and it's pretty hot stuff.
I should read some. I haven't yet. I'm.
Oh my gosh! I can't believe I actually beat you to the punch on something fanfic wise. This is fantastic.
I need to get on that, because you're right. I literally at the top. I know this doesn't count because we're talking about why they're bad villains, but at the top of my notes, I wrote he's hot as fuck and was always sweaty.
True and true.
Okay.
And the sweater he got, the hotter he got.
But like, you know, real talk. You everything you said is correct. And I think what's so interesting about him, he's my number three, I already said, but I still don't know what side he was on, because he really wasn't on a side. He was on his own side.
Exactly.
But I still, when I watch what's the last Existence, when he gets killed at the end, I still I can't quite figure out what he's trying to get, what he's trying to do at the end there. Like, I still don't know.
Yeah, I think his motives became a little murky in season 8.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if anyone quite knew what he was supposed to do at that point.
I mean, I agree. Like, I think I think it was Requiem when he was essentially telling Mulder that his main motivation was just to fuck over Smoking Man, which at that point I kind of bought that. And I was like,
I bought that too.
Yeah. But I think the second he says that, he kind of in theory becomes a good guy. And then he's not interesting anymore. So I feel like they had to to bring him back. They had to be like, oh, what are we going to do with Krycek? Let's have him try to kill Scully's baby. Like, you know, but then they never really explained like why. Like he tries to explain to us what's going on with the baby, but like he doesn't even really seem to know what's going on.
Yeah.
So right around season 8, even though like I don't think he was ever hotter. And so he was always pretty to look at. So I never minded him in season 8 at all. But like, you're right. Right around then, it was less clear what was going on. Like, at least with Krycek, I always knew, oh, he's going to show up and he's going to do something that's going to help himself.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel that in season 8. So he got really confusing. And I think it's for the reasons I said, like, they just didn't really know what to do with him anymore. So it's kind of unfortunate, but he still was a great character. And I was actually, I'm more excited to see him come up on the screen than Smoking Man.
I totally see your point.
Yeah.
I think it would have been better if they'd killed him off in Requiem or shortly thereafter, because it's true, they didn't really know what to do with him in season 8. They knew they needed a bad guy, and he was a handy dandy bad guy, and he just served that purpose. But I'm not sure if his character made much sense at that point.
Yeah.
He was just, you know, the utility bad guy whenever they needed one. So they would bring him in because they didn't have Cigarette Smoking Man in season 8, so they needed someone familiar and sinister, I guess.
But
I agree that not a super effective season for him. I think his sort of pinnacle as a character was probably in Requiem, and he's still like, he's totally believable, and it's not like he's being redeemed or something. It's just he's clearly once again out just for himself, and it's just revenge against the people that screwed him over. And it's totally believable and totally Krycek. So I love that. And
also shout out. Sorry, finish your sentence. Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Shout out to my little neighbor cat that lives outside that we have named Krycat because Mulder, my cat Mulder, sits at the window and meows plaintively for him to come. And this other cat comes up and they stare longingly at each other through the window. And so we have Mulder and Krycat, and they love each other.
I love them, and I ship them really hard.
Oh, I ship them too. It's It's the only scenario in which I would ship Mulder with anyone else, but
I can't remember how you put it exactly when you first tweeted about Crycat, but it was something like, you don't know if they're in love, if they're going to start fighting or something like that. And that was so perfectly Krychek.
But either way, I was on the edge of my seat.
Yeah.
And that is Alex Krycek in a nutshell.
That's it. Krycek and Mulder in particular. It always seemed like they could either be punching each other or kissing each other. Could go either way at any given moment. Because they always just had, there was always something going on between those two. I love Krycat and I love Krycek, and I kind of secretly ship Krycek and Mulder a tiny bit in a hot way.
Well, maybe
there's just a hotness between them.
Maybe I will after I read some fanfic.
I'd recommend some titles if I could remember any, but I'm not as good at that as regular readers are.
I'm putting it out on Twitter. You guys, send me the best Krycek Mulder fanfic you can think of.
There's people out there that know. I know that there's people that have like read way more than I have and can be a curator for us.
Yes, please. I will put that out to the masses.
And give us, you know, as we would say in the old days, I don't know if we use this term anymore, some Krycek Mulder / fic.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
That's what we're looking for right now. Yeah. And I enjoy that stuff. So hooray for Krycek.
Yeah.
The only reason I didn't put him higher is because he did really annoy me for quite a long time. For seasons 2 and 3, I just he bugged me too much. It took me a long time to get over the fact that he was responsible for Scully's abduction.
Yeah.
And so it just bothered me a lot, but he became progressively more interesting in 5, 6, 7 were really strong seasons for him.
I don't know. We're in top 5, so he's pretty high on your list.
He's pretty high.
Yeah.
I briefly considered putting him at number 1, but for some reason, the more I thought about it, the more my other three just edged him out a little bit. So what is your number 4?
All right. Well, my number 4 is Donnie Faster.
Yes.
Is he
my number 2.
Okay. Well, good. And you down here at the bottom here, we're going to have some crossover maybe. But I think what's so scary about Donnie Faster is that there's nothing supernatural about him. He's just a regular creepy dude. But I mean, they do have the added element of Scully seeing the demons and the devil. But what I think is so cool, and I mean, even kind of ahead of its time, and I believe Irresistible was a Chris Carter episode. Am I right?
It was, yeah.
The fact that I watch it with a different lens today with the whole Me Too movement and everything going on and everything going on right now. Just the idea that women move through their lives daily with fear of men. And I love the part at the end where he's just turning into all kinds of different men. It could be anyone. Yeah. And I think that's really powerful, and it's just a small moment, and it's not anything supernatural, or maybe it is. I don't know. You know, she sees him as the devil, but she also sees him as men. So I think they're definitely trying to say something with that, obviously, but it sticks out to me because of that. Just the idea that he's just this normal dude that's out there preying on women. And it could happen to anybody. I think Mulder even says that in the episode. That's what's so scary about him.
Yeah, totally agree. Brilliant character. Nick Chindland, I believe, is the actor.
Oh, he's creepy.
He's creepy as fuck and brilliant. And I just love the way, he's obviously extremely sinister, but then he'll say things to his victims like, you have normal or dry hair?
Right,
and it's just so weird.
Yeah, that adds to his creep factor.
It does.
It's for his benefit. It's for his own benefit. It's so gross. Ew.
Yeah, his fetishes are just so bizarre in the sense that, he's so into the whole nail polish, hair treatment kind of stuff. And it just seems really bizarre in the context of these sort of, horrible things that he does. And it's a fascinating character to watch and really frightening and very well portrayed and well done. I'm not as crazy about his sequel episode.
Orison.
Thank you. I don't think it's quite as powerful as, well, I don't think it's nearly as powerful as Irresistible. I think in a way that they might have been well enough just to leave him alone after Irresistible. Because he's like, he's a perfect villain. And it's just, it's a really well done episode around his character. And oh, that line where he's looking for Scully in the house and he says, "I know this house, girly girl." Ugh. And there's just something about that that just sort of chills up my spine. And it's just like one of those lines that just stuck in my head.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I can't seem to forget it. So it's well done, well played, well written. Kudos to Chris Carter.
Yeah.
Great episode, great character.
I mean, I actually really like Orison. I don't like the whole episode. I do like the end stuff with Scully shooting him and stuff. I think that made some really interesting character.
That's very interesting
development. But I mean, you're right. I mean, I think it's very clear that this character, and not even Scully, even Jillian has said, like, this is the creepiest one ever. Like, this is the scariest one. Obviously
Donnie
affected her.
Fucking faster.
Yeah, obviously affected her back from what was that, season 2?
Season 2
to the point where she still was in, you know, terror 5 seasons later. You know what I mean? And so that was actually really interesting to bring him back. So I liked the idea that they brought him back. But you know, it made me think at the time when this episode came out, which would have been 94, I think, maybe 95. This was probably not something that was very mainstream in terms of, hey, this stuff happens, this whole sort of desecration of bodies and all that. Like, and it made me think of, like, even, I don't know if you've seen the show The Fall, which is ironically with Gillian Anderson, but that character, the serial killer character in that show always made me think of Donnie Faster because he does, like, the same stuff. Like, he likes to, like, bathe them and do their nails and, like, pose them. And, like, and I know that's, like, very, like, I watch a lot of, like, serial killer stuff and, like, that's like what they like to do, like, now. But I feel like back in the day when this episode first came out, that probably wasn't something that was on people's TVs, you know?
I don't think it was. And certainly it's just kind of alluded to. We don't get a lot of detail about that, but it's enough.
Right.
Certainly enough. If I understand correctly, I've read that originally Donnie Faster was meant to be a necrophiliac, I do believe, which means he has a sexual attraction to dead bodies, more specifically and more clearly. But then they changed the terminology to quote unquote death fetishist because they just apparently that was just something that they could get past sort of the censors. It's no better, but in my opinion.
No, it is no better.
That was just good enough that they could kind of get it under the wire there, but it's still super creepy. And I agree. It's certainly not, you know, there's a lot about serial killers and the like, you know, with Criminal Minds and that sort of thing on TV these days. But certainly, back then that was pretty, I think it stands out for sure and very creepy and scary and ahead of its time as The X-Files so often was.
Yeah, certainly.
Nice one. So that was your
So what's your 3?
4. So we're on to 3. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to check off my number 2 because we just did Donnie Faster. My number 3 is not surprising to anyone, probably Robert Modell from Pusher. Is he on your list?
Nope.
He's not on your list. I'm so happy about that because I thought for sure I'm like, this is one we're definitely going to have in common.
I have a reason. You tell your story and then I'll tell
you. All right. I'm looking forward to hearing your reason. I love Pusher. I love the character, I think, is really fascinating, interesting. He seems like kind of this regular guy, but he's somehow acquired this really terrifying ability. And, you know, he's a bit like, in the same mode as Boggs and Roche as being like one of these sort of manipulative criminals that likes to sort of play little games with Mulder and Scully. And I always find that kind of interesting. And I think he's like maybe this, to me, one of the scariest, most sort of frightening and dangerous monsters, in the sense that he can do anything to you without him having to really do much of anything.
Yeah.
The idea that, you know, the idea of, you know, forcing you to do things to yourself that you can't help no matter how hard you try, you know, lighting yourself on fire, something like that. You're never safe in that case. No matter what you do to try to make yourself safe, he will find a way to overcome that. And that's a scary thought, that, you know, there's, it's not a question of keeping him and his violence away from you. You will inflict the violence upon yourself. And so that's a, it's a scary concept, and it's well realized in the show and really interesting to watch. Well played by Robert Wisden. And he's my number three. I just, I find him a fascinating character. Another one who came back again in a later episode, Kitsunagari, I want to say, which isn't as strong, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree.
He might have been, you know, again, perhaps best left alone in my books, but still super strong. He makes it to number three on my list.
Well, here's the thing. I was going to put him on. He made the short list. And then, I, as I was narrowing my list down, I thought more and more about it. And I was like, you know what? I think I love that episode. It's one of my very favorite episodes. And I'm not even saying that, like, all the MSR in that episode kind of outshines everything, because it does. But the more I thought about it, the more I was like, you know, I think his power is more interesting than the actual character.
Okay, fair enough.
Like, I feel like anyone could have played that character, and we would have gotten the same episode. So I think the strength in that episode is in the, and that, so that's just my personal opinion. Why he didn't make my list of my, like, favorite villains, because I think that for me, what makes that episode is the episode as a whole, and not necessarily like that particular guy. I think he did a great job, and I mean, I think that he's obviously I think he's great. I didn't want to stick him on my list for that reason.
Fair enough. Hey, it's whatever grabs you, right?
Right.
Just like Tombs didn't make it to mine.
Exactly. This was like my Tombs, so that makes sense.
Yep, fair enough. Yeah. I'll give you a freebie on that one. You give me a pass on Tombs, I can happily give you a pass on Robert Modell.
All right.
What's your number three?
Okay, well, my three was Krycek, and your two...
Oh, yeah, right.
And your two and was my two Donnie.
Was Donnie fucking Faster.
So now we're down to my number two.
Your number two.
We're down to brass tacks here.
We're seriously down to brass tacks.
And I am so sorry okay. to have to bring right. up this person. But my number two Uh-oh. Is Diana okay. Fowley.
Shit! I'm going to have to bleep this whole section now.
Is she not
realize.
On your list?
No, I didn't even think of her for some reason. I have blanked her out of my life. I don't know why. She should be number one on my list, but she's not.
No, my number one's better. But you, okay, this, Diana Fowley.
This is painful for me.
Yeah. Oh, the foul one. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason, she's definitely a bad guy. We find out she's working with Smoking Man. So not even, I mean, even in terms of like the actual plot and mythology and all that, like she is actually working for the Smoking Man. Like she's actually a threat to Mulder. But more so, and the reason she made my list is obviously because she's the biggest obstacle we encounter that directly threatens the MSR, which, no, honey, we do not fuck with the MSR. So
we do not.
Seriously, for that reason, I just don't like her. I don't like...
God, yes.
Every time she's on the screen, I just want to throw things. And I don't know if it's just my deep-seated like need for her to just like leave because she's piercing my Mulder and Scully happy bubble. But I also just don't like her attitude. Like, she's just kind of got this condescending way of talking to Scully. I don't like it. And I just don't like the way she calls him Fox. It's like, shut up, bitch. Okay, I don't want to talk anymore about Diana Fowley because I'm sure she'll probably have her whole episode at some point. I know we have some listeners that are interested in that, but
I have a lot of things to say about Diana Fowley. I have to say,
well, please say them, please.
I don't know why she's not on my list. I can't explain it. I think it was all I could say is that I just blocked her out of my mind because thinking about her like gets me agitated. That's how much I hate her.
Yeah,
and it is because for all the reasons you've well articulated, like. Speaking about, you know, how villains meet their end, no way did she meet an appropriate end. All, you know, she gets killed off screen and suddenly she's like this fucking hero because she kind of saves Mulder at the end. No, not good enough.
I don't think anyone thinks of her as a hero.
Well, that scene between Mulder and Scully, which turns into like an awesome scene of touchstones and fabulous forehead kissing. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, it's all like, Scully's like, I misjudged her or something like
that. No. She just says, no. She doesn't say that. I know that scene by heart. She says, I never trusted her. But she was your, I'm sorry, she was your friend. Something like that. I know she was your friend.
Yes, but she's implying that she should have trusted her. Like, I didn't trust her, but I should have, seems to be the unspoken part to me.
I didn't get that.
I don't know. It really upsets me, I have to say, because I just feel like, she kind of got away with it a little bit.
She does say she helped save your life just as much as I did. She did say that.
That's it. And no, she
She didn't go to Africa.
No, she did not. And she's being portrayed as like a hero. And yeah, she did like one good thing at the end, but it's her own damn fault for putting Mulder in that situation in the first place. So why we are portraying her as a hero at the end, I do not know.
I still have to disagree with this portrayal. I feel like, I don't think that's what they're trying to get across. I feel like Scully is probably just like, this is the only, I have to tell you this news. Right. I'm not going to let you know how thrilled I am about this news. So all I'm going to say is something nice. And I'm going to be like, look, this doesn't affect me in any way, but I know she was your friend. Sorry. Like, that's kind of, and
that's
obviously in not that tone, because I think at this point she's just super confused about everything that's going on. But I don't know. Yeah. I don't think that I think they made her a bit sympathetic, but I never ever walked away thinking that she was a hero. Never.
No. Well, I didn't either, but I feel like that's what she was being portrayed as. She saved your life as much as I did. I mean, come on. I mean, I understand she's trying to be like, I agree. She's trying to be sort of diplomatic and saying things like, I know she was your friend. That's all very fair. I'm fine with that. But she saved your life as much as I did. Come on, Scully.
Well, I mean, okay. First of all, this is Scully. I'm not defending Diana Fowley. Don't get me wrong.
God, no.
I'm defending Scully's words, because from Scully's perspective, she would never have found Mulder if Diana hadn't let her there. So
well, that is true.
From Scully's perspective, I wouldn't have saved you without her. It's true. It's the truth. So, I mean, Mulder doesn't even like, he doesn't respond. Like, he looks kind of sad and a little shocked.
Yeah.
But then he immediately launches into the I love you, Scully speech. So I don't take it that way. Like, I just don't read it that way. So
fair enough.
I live in my happy world where that doesn't exist.
Yeah, I prefer it the way you're reading it. And I'm going to try to look at it that way. And then maybe my blood pressure would be in better shape all the way around. Because she's on so much. I mean, the whole from the end of season 5, she shows up far too often for my liking in season 6. Thank God she's not in Fight the Future, because I would have ruined it.
Oh, God, yeah.
And every time she shows up, it's just like, like there's no other character that bothers me as much as she did. And I think it is because of the whole, you know, Mulder just seems so stupid about her the whole time.
Yeah.
And that really bugs me.
I hate in, what is it, Two Fathers or One Son, how he's just like, she's like, well, what do you know? Why do you trust her so much? He's like, well, you haven't given me any reason not to. And I'm just like, are you the biggest baby in the world right now? Yes, you are. You are
Seriously.
Fox freaking Mulder. You don't trust
Honestly.
Anybody. Like, all the red flags, she's like, look at all these red flags. Hello. And he's like, what red flags? Like, I just didn't like seeing Mulder being stupid. You're right. Like, that's
so stupid. But you know, Mulder has a history of being a little stupid with his exes, because as previously discussed in the episode Fire, we have Phoebe Green showing up on the scene, and he suddenly seems to turn into like this automaton that just follows her around and seems to have no will of his own anymore.
Well, I mean, the poor guy doesn't get any, you know.
No, and he's obviously very easily led by certain parts of his anatomy, and like the brain definitely goes to sleep.
Yeah.
And seeing him like that in one episode is bad enough in Fire, but seeing him for like that so much of season 6 really bugs me. Thank God she's forgotten for significant parts of season 6, but every time she shows up,
well, I mean,
she
only shows up in the mythology episode, so I mean,
yes. That's enough.
It's not too terrible, but
that is enough.
Yeah, you're right.
It just ruins those episodes for me, but thank God she's dead at the end. That's all I can say.
One of the best deaths. And we never even got to see it. You're right. We never saw a body, so she could still be out there somewhere.
It just would have made me feel better. I feel like for my mental health, it would have been good for me to see her get shot by somebody. I have some kind of terrible death. It would have just really made me feel good. Like, you know, the way I felt, it felt good when I saw Krycek get shot in the head by Skinner.
That would have felt good.
Good. But seeing someone shoot Diana Fowley right in the head, oh, like Mulder would have been perfect, something like that. Then I would have forgiven him all the terrible things he did in season six.
Mm-hmm.
It just, for someone that was such a villain and so hated by so much of the audience, they just kind of wasted her end because it would have gotten such a cheer to have like a really like awesome on-screen death for her.
Yeah.
But instead she just kind of petered out and I didn't feel a sense of closure at all.
No, I didn't either. That's a really good point.
But thank God she did not come back. She's one of the few X-File deaths that she could easily have not really been dead.
Exactly. They could have easily brought her back. Let's just be thankful for small mercies, right?
Let's be very thankful. Let's not talk about that anymore, just in case Chris Carter is listening to us, because why wouldn't he? Because by some chance, season 12, we don't want to give him ideas.
I'm no longer worried about Diana as a threat to the MSR at this stage in the game.
I just don't want to see her ever again.
No, that's true. But I mean, as my primary issue with her, I think is moot. So,
yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, we can all be over that. Oof.
Why do they have to call her Diana? Like, come on. They think Diana. They're so clever.
Seriously, right? No, everything about her Fowley. Yeah,
I really know. It is kind of a great name when you think about it.
It works.
It is a great name.
You know, we all call her the Foul One, and it's just a nickname that is just dying to be made. So
very appropriate.
Very appropriate. Excellent choice again. I'm going to give you super kudos for your list because you've had some really top choices.
You're going to like my number one too, but I already know what your number one is.
You can guess my number one is by process of elimination. My number one is Cigarette Smoking Man, as previously discussed in some detail. For me, I can't not put him at number one just because he's the antagonist for the entire series. I think I read today that he's the only actor that was, besides Gillian and David, that was in the pilot and the final episode.
Oh.
He's there the whole way through.
Yeah.
And he's always representing the sort of everything that stands in the way of Mulder and Scully and what they're trying to achieve. And for that alone, he has to be my number one. And for the reasons we discussed as well, for why he's kind of an awesome character, especially in the earlier seasons.
Yeah.
And he's just this great figure, I think, in the series. And I like that. I understand your point about not being able to stomach putting him higher than you did because of what he became in season 11.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I mean, I totally see your point. The only kind of way I can kind of live with it is if I think about him. You know, obviously there's a lot of differences here, but we think about the character of Monica in season 11, Monica Reyes. Obviously, really kind of a character assassination is done to her.
Yeah.
And she does really, you know, she's a bad guy in season 11. She never really gets properly redeemed.
No.
In my opinion. So if you'd never seen her before, you're really just left with the impression she's a bad guy.
Right.
But at the same time, those who are, you know, Monica fans don't stop being Monica fans because of how she's portrayed in season 11. That just makes them angry and filled with a sense of injustice, and I totally agree with them.
I guess so. That's a really good point.
So that's kind of where I'm at with the Cigarette Smoking Man. Obviously, you know, he's not to the same extent as Monica, because Monica was a terrific character before and they did terrible things with her character. Cigarette Smoking Man was always a bad guy.
Right.
But he was a different kind of bad guy before season 11 came along, and season 11 kind of messed that up a little bit. I agree. He's always a little creepily interested in Scully. But it obviously goes to a whole other ick factor in season 11. That's kind of hard to stomach. So all I can try to do is say, well, you know, they fucked up Monica's character and they also fucked up the Cigarette Smoking Man. And if we can still love Monica, then I can still put Cigarette Smoking Man as my number one. So that's my defense.
I think that's fair.
Cigarette Smoking Man. But I totally see your point, too.
I think that's totally fair. I think he's it's hard to not put him at number one because obviously he's the classic best villain on the show. I mean, he is. My number one for that reason is kind of silly. I'm not moving on. I'm just telling you. My number one's kind of silly for that reason because I can't put him there. So,
all right, fair enough. I'm also just going to say about Cigarette Smoking Man, I think that the order in which you've seen the seasons might have a something of an impact on your impression of him as a character, because as we discussed, he is, I think, a lot stronger in the earlier seasons. And so I watched the whole series in order from the beginning. And so
that's true.
He made that impression upon me as that character from the earlier seasons. If I had seen him in the latter seasons first, I probably wouldn't have made my number one, probably because I wouldn't have had that attachment to him as a character. But I always loved him from the beginning. You know, that there's that Bare Naked Ladies song with the line in it about watching these files until the lights on. I hope the Smoking Man's in this one. And that's how we used to feel back in the day, was, you know, it was always awesome when he was on.
Yeah.
And over time, it kind of progressively became a little less awesome. But he was such an awesome character, especially in those first seasons. So, I will always be attached to him for that reason.
Well, I mean, it's a perfect choice.
All right, what's your number one? Now I can't wait to find out.
All right, my number one most despised antagonist in the entire run of the show.
Okay.
That fucking bee.
Kudos.
And
kudos,
you know what?
Your choice.
That's really all that I have to say. That's my number one.
That fucking bee. The fact that all we have to say is that fucking bee, and all of our listeners are going to know exactly who we mean and what we mean and why we mean.
Yep.
Is exactly why he should be number one. And why am I calling the bee a he? I don't know.
Oh, you know, it's just Smoking Man in bee form.
Yes, he is. I can't argue with that number one. I think that's a solid number one, for especially for us shippers.
Why, thank you. I had to do it. I had to do a shippy one.
That's great. That is a very creative and really entirely defendable number one. So kudos to your number one.
Thank you.
Shall we move on to honorable mentions?
Yeah, we each get an honorable mention. Okay.
All right. Let's do honorable mentions. I go back and forth between two different ones I had, and I think I'm gonna go with my original thought. I changed my mind, and now I'm gonna change it back again. The one I'm gonna go with is, because I haven't picked any monsters. That's kind of what wound up being the theme of my list, actually, up until this point, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from the slug, which I kind of excuse because he has its cult. All of my choices are
people,
humans to some degree. And so that wound up being kind of the theme of my list is, you know, I just tend to like kind of the evil people. That's what I like in a villain. So for my honorable mention, I'm going to throw in something that's not a human, just to kind of shake things up a little bit. And for me, this is the creepiest monster, I think, of all of the whole series, and it's just because it just really ticks all the boxes of all my phobias, and it's the bugs in Darkness Falls.
Oh.
Those glowing green bugs. And when you find out that they're actually like all around you on all the surfaces, when they find that out near the end of the episode, and they just start swarming in the dark, but they're actually there all the time.
Yeah.
And no wonder like Scully freaks out when she notices that. And Mulder's like, yeah, I kind of knew that all along. I'm like, you could have warned her.
I know, seriously.
That is like super creepy, this idea that there's like stuff on you at all times that could like at any second start swarming and kill you.
Yeah.
Those things are creepy and scary. Ooh. And they scare the shit out of me. And like they created those awful, like scary cocoons. And
yeah, they make me itch. Ew.
Yeah, that is those are really scary to me. So for me, if we're just talking about pure fear, that is it. I'm really scared of any kind of like infestation, freaks me out as a concept. And so those bugs scare the shit out of me. So it's the bugs in Darkness Falls are my honorable mention.
I like that. That's an interesting, cool choice, because it isn't something I would think of. It's not like it's not a single entity. It's like millions.
It is. That's what's so scary about it.
All right. Well, I think my honorable mention is actually a great way to cap off this episode because I picked the most insidious, diabolical monster in the entire series.
Oh, no. What's that going to be?
My honorable mention.
Yeah.
Is Chris Carter.
Now, that's going to be a popular choice.
Okay, because, I mean, come on, let's be real. We know why. He's essentially the puppet master for everything horrible that happens to Mulder and Scully.
It's true.
And he seems to take great pleasure in that. And we all hate him / love him for it, just like all the monsters on this list. So
that's right. That's right. Yeah, you're not saying that you hate him, just that, like everyone else on the list, he's a fascinating villain.
He's evil as fuck. Let's just say it.
Yeah, he really is. He is. Yeah, all these other villains and all these other horrible things all emanate from him.
He is the metaphorical kid with the magnifying glass.
He really is
holding it up over our beloved characters, and you know what?
That's a good one.
He created him, but he also messes with them far too much. So.
It is so true. We did not have that many in common at all.
We didn't.
In the end, I think by my count, only had three. And it's the cigarette smoking man and Donnie Faster. Those two are not super unpredictable. But the third one I did not see coming, the parasitic slug from Roadrunners.
And we also had Krycek. We also had Krycek.
Oh, and Krycek. So, yep, you're right. So we actually have four.
Four.
Okay. Four in common. So you win in terms of guessing because you guessed five.
Yay. I love that the slug made both of our lists. That's amazing.
And if I'd put money on, like, if someone had said, okay, you're going to have four in common, which four do you think it's going to be? That literally would have been the last one I would have picked probably.
Well, the most...
Because I never thought that anyone would ever pick that one.
The most surprising thing is that you forgot Diana Fally. I thought for sure she would be on your
list.
Know,
I don't know how I forgot that. Because it's not like Tombs where he actually was on my short list, but he just didn't quite make it. For some reason, it didn't even occur to me. And all I can say is that it's just, you know, for the sake of my mental health, I try not to think about her.
And that's a safe way to go. So,
because obviously when I start talking about her, the ranting begins.
Well, this was...
But that was cathartic. It was cathartic for me.
This was fun. I like that we did something a little different.
This was fun.
And I'm glad that I filmed this, like, right when I'm about to go to bed. So now I have to think about all this while I'm trying to sleep.
That's great. Isn't it nice that now we have, like, the image of all of these horrible things in our head at the same time?
Oh, God.
I hope our listeners are listening to this on, like, a bright, sunny morning or something like that on their way to work.
I hope so, too.
This is not ideal bedtime listening unless you like to be scared of bedtime, which maybe some people do. Who knows?
Well, I think people watch this show probably like that, but...
They probably do.
Well, this was a lot of fun.
This was a lot of fun. It was really some really, really interesting characters from the X-Files over many, many seasons. We spanned the whole series.
We certainly did. Seriously, day one to day, the last day. I mean, we really did.
Yeah, we really did.
That's awesome.
It's a strong damn series for the whole 11 series. So
it really is. Well, thanks you guys for listening. You could tweet at us at XFD Podcast. If we forgot your favorite, please tweet at us. Let us know, because I'm sure we did. I'm sure we forgot a lot of favorites. But yes. But yeah, thanks for listening. And we will be back with you in 2 weeks with some more X-Files Diaries.
Yes.